Alright, so this is Virtuoso Chronicles, and I'm here with Cindy from the Court Street Chamber Orchestra. Cindy, what's up?
Hey, I'm Cindy Ann Beckles. As Ethan introduced me as, I'm under the training of Mrs. Ganila Tankai of the Court Street Chamber Orchestra, and I have been a student of Mrs. Tankai since the year 2005. Took a long break to go to school, and I started back with her in 2013, the latter half of it, and here I am trying to make my way back into the violin path towards the ultimate goal of being a violin virtuoso. But you know, realistically, I also have another career path that is not music oriented, and but you know, there's a dream and there's a hope, right?
Yep. So I want to ask you about playing the violin in general. Like, how do you see it? Like, when someone plays the violin, how do you think they should feel?
Oh, when someone plays violin, I would prefer that they don't see it as a chore, but rather as something relaxing, something that brings them joy and, you know, fulfillment. And I know even on a more extreme level, closer to God if possible. But yeah, that's how I feel that you should feel.
So like not a chore, like more
not a chore, more
enjoyable.
Like, yeah, more like like almost like you not really need this to live, but it helps you to live a more fulfilling life. Let's go for it.
So how about the body? How do you think the body should feel?
Relaxed, and I mean, that's not always possible, especially if you're not competitive, but like if it's part of your academia, it tends to bring some stresses along with it, because you know, Yvonne, our colleague who's at UTT right now, Marino, she's had moments where she has had panic practices and has caused herself some injuries for a while. So yeah, but generally you should definitely feel a sense of relaxation, and you know, just once you're playing out of passion and not out of worry and stress, you know, the result would be a relaxed body. It's so psychosomatic for me in terms of violin playing. And then there are some people who are playing in a relaxed state, but you do have some techniques that you need to improve, you, and you know, therefore it will cause some stresses on your body. So idealistically it is, you know, you want to be relaxed at all times, but if you're really playing to become a better violinist technically and to improve, you know, skill, etc., you tend to have to focus on your body tends to be tensed up in certain areas, and that's what you work towards, to get in that ultimate relaxed state.
Yeah.
At all times.
And I agree. I mean, even some techniques and some things you want to evoke from your playing will require you to be tense at times too.
Exactly.
But I think it should be controlled.
Yes.
You know, like, you shouldn't be at the mercy of the way you play.
Exactly.
Yeah. How about like, it's the hardest thing you had to overcome while playing, like in your violin life? What's the most difficult thing that you had to overcome?
Definitely, vibrato.
I hear that so much.
Yeah, definitely. It was so horrible.
It's one of mine too.
Yes, it took so much out of me, and Like, I'm so glad that I have it now, and it feels so effortless. And it was one issue, one little issue that a friend helped me get out of it, which was basically that they, I never used to play with a shoulder rest. And I don't know if you tell, I have a very long neck. And this, without the shoulder rest, the violin had no stability. My shoulder was the one bracing it. And there was this violin shaking every single time that I tried to do the technique. And then my friend bought me a shoulder rest for Christmas, because I did recognize after a while that that might have been the issue. And he bought me one of the best ones, if not the best ones, according to my violin teacher. And immediately I learned to do to vibrato, but it took me years to get to recognize that that was the issue and resolve it. And yeah, it did take a toll on me as a violinist, and also it took a toll on my passion for playing, unfortunately. And because it took so many years for me to recognize what the issue was, to this day, if I don't have a shoulder rest on my violin, I cannot do vibrato.
Ironic, right? Like, some techniques actually depend on how your violin is with you.
Yeah.
It's like, it was an instant fix.
Exactly, it was, because I was practicing the techniques forever, and I'm like, why wouldn't it come together? And then it just dawned on me one day, which I literally was praying about this thing, and then it just dawned on me. And once I got that as a present, it was just like, I felt like if God felt sorry for me, I was like, the violin God was like, oh my God, just get this girl a violin, a body rest already. Like, I can't even deal with watching her suffer another year. And, you know, that was just instantaneous and, you know, so rewarding to hear the sound that comes out of vibrato. And, yeah.
I think that's an important thing. A lot of people think that, you know, their performance is completely their fault, when it could be just how your instrument or and you interact.
Correct.
Not really your technique all the time.
Yes.
I used to think that way, too. I thought that if I couldn't do vibrato right, it was my technique completely.
Yeah.
And then I found different ways to hold it, made it feel different, like shoulder rest and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Kind of like changed the game for me.
Exactly. There you go.
Yeah.
So you could relate.
I could relate.
At least you didn't take years to come to that. True.
Maybe God felt sorry for me too. Drop the shoulder rest on me. One more thing. You teach, right?
Yes.
What do you think is the hardest thing for your students to get? When you teach them?
When I teach me... well, I would say sight reading. I would go with that, because they just... We put fingers, the finger patterns for them so that they could play songs. Everybody wants to know that they could play a song. And then they get so dependent on the finger patterns that they don't want to lose them. And if they don't lose the finger patterns, we lose the sight reading and the interest and the challenge. And then a new challenge is birthed, which is basically not sight reading, but getting them to understand that the finger pattern needs to go.
Yeah.
You know, that's the challenge presented more than them sight reading. So where I'm trying to right now, I don't want any books with any finger patterns. I want them to, they could have like the one-off song that, you know, we may have to play for a concert or something, that I would put it there. But I'm not going to have that. They are going to learn from the ground up, and there will never be finger patterns. And I think that was a huge... I've not learned with finger patterns, so I was forced to sight read from throughout my entire violin playing. But because Well, Mrs. Tanke wanted the younger children to be able to play songs with us immediately. She put them in all in the learning books, in fiddle time joggers. And I don't know if she encountered this issue, but I did a huge deal to get them to just be independent of those finger patterns. So the sight reading became problematic, and so much so that I felt like in particularly one student that violin became a chore for her, and the exams were nearly impossible. It was just like every week we were toggling, and I'm never going to have finger patterns in learning books anymore. Yeah. Only for concert songs that we need it, like there's a need for it quickly, and even then I think I would just tell them, like, look, no, you need to learn the note value lengths, and you know, and yeah, just learn the slurs, learn to see everything together. They get way too dependent on that, so that's been my challenge, really.
Yeah, so like, it's like training wheels, right?
Yes.
They don't want to take them off.
Exactly.
And they just leave them on because, yes, of the added support. But yes, you shouldn't need that.
Yes, exactly. So I don't want my children to have training wheels. I mean, if I can avoid it, like, seriously, just build them up without these training wheels, like, I've seen that it's actually taxing on me as well, because, you know, they know they could have it, and they know how to figure out these to put them back in. So I give them the music without it, and then they come with it written in. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, this is not going to happen with any other student ever again. Yeah. But they feel so good when they get it.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot of mental habit breaking. So yeah, that's my challenge.
I could agree with that. So I think I ran into that too. I didn't learn with any finger patterns, but when I did start to use them a little bit, I kind of, the comfort got to me.
Yeah,
I was like, let me just keep this here.
Yeah,
I wanted to keep it.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's addictive.
It is. I see that it is now. I didn't have that issue, but now I'm just like, because if I knew I had that issue, I would have avoided it with them, because I love that they could play with you know, songs so easily.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh my gosh, what have we done?
Created monsters.
Yes, like, I'm just, and you know, I as an adult, because I learned as an adult, understood that they needed to go, and I wanted them to go so badly that I, you know, with the songs that I had to play for concerts, that I would ask my teacher, like, once it wasn't too close to the concert, like, I would be excited to just be like, no, I don't need those. I don't need the number pattern on mine. I used to tell her, it's confusing me. But I didn't know the opposite effect would happen with younger children who just want to learn songs, when I want to learn skill. So it was just like, oh, darn, this is not a good idea.
I think it can even boil down to that. It can boil down to playing songs versus acquiring skills.
Exactly.
And I think that's where the combo kind of needs to come in, but I think they shouldn't be, one shouldn't be preferred over the other.
Another, exactly. Yeah. Correct.
So, yeah,
that's where it's at.
One more thing though, what do you think about practice? Like, what is your views on it? How long should someone practice? How does it help? How does it not help after a certain point? You know, what do you think?
Okay, well, practice has so many facets to it, right? It's just a multifaceted thing. You have to think about the length of time.
It's a broad question.
Yes, you have to think about the length of time. What is it doing to your body? What is it doing to you mentally? Are you learning after a certain time? You know, are you built for the length of time that you want to practice? what are the best hours to practice? What is the best environment? It's so many, so many things. You know, are you panic practicing? You know, so, you know, there's studies done on the length of time. Some people say they practice 8 hours a day. Some people said you shouldn't practice more than 4 to 5 hours a day. Some people even go as little as like 2, you know, or some people give you time regimens of like how long you should practice and then take a break for stretching and then come back in. I know for myself, like I used to practice like a beast when I first started violin, like, but I mean, mine paid off, but it was never like, it was never more than like 4 hours of practice for sure. It really did, and it was like the passion. I think your motive when you're practicing as well. Are you practicing it out of duty or out of passion? That's a large part to play in it, and so because that will tell you your body's state. Are you, well, you could stress in passion as well, but I think when you're practicing out of duty, you can actually stress more, where you're just like, oh, I don't really care to do this, but I have exams coming up, so I have to, like, yeah, you need to, you know. So it's that's why I say it's really multidimensional, and I am just, I would say like it's also very personalized as well. So I would definitely encourage somebody to build up their practice to what's still comfortable for them. And listen to your body cues. Be very attentive of it, like, oh, am I practicing? Am I still feeling relaxed? You know? Or am I just like forcing myself to get the skill when my body's saying stop, you know?
That is important
to me. Yeah, you know? And, you know, while you're practicing, you could feel, are you still getting better with each playing, or is it getting worse? Definitely playing slowly helps you a lot. That's definitely, every note should have a life of its own. You pay attention to every note, and remember, practicing is not just, you know, there's so many things. You're practicing, yes, a song in general, but you're practicing your intonation. So you have to be listening to your body, listening to your intonation in some cases, looking at your technique, looking at, it's so multifaceted that, you know, that's why I guess you have to split it up. Like, some people split it up, and you really have to personalize your practice to what you and your body and your mentality and your emotions are telling you to do. Sometimes you just need to stop, but ideally it should be daily, and at least starting with, like Miss Tanka used to always say, 5 minutes a day, that's all you need. And most likely, you know, she knows that you're not going to practice for 5 minutes and put down that violin.
Yeah,
so she, it's just a technique. It's just like a momentum, like get the ball rolling. Yeah. And even if, and I kind of like that, because, you know, you probably would do a little 15 minutes to half an hour, and then afterwards, you know, you pick up, when you do for such short periods, if you're now beginning to practice after a long time of not practicing, or, you know, or even as a beginner, something is happening with each practice. So consistency is
key.
Yes, so I would say practice daily, and practice wisely.
I usually aim to, if I were to decide when to stop practicing, I usually aim to stop when I feel it in my body. Like when my muscles start to feel strained, when I feel a little bit of fatigue.
Right.
I kind of try to end it there, because it's when I realize I might be going over a certain line that my body might have drawn. I usually support Itzhak Perlman's idea. He says to practice 5 hours a day max, but every hour of practice should not be a full hour. He says, for our hour, make it, say, 3 quarters practice, 1 quarter rest.
Right.
And count that as our whole practice hour.
Right. Okay, great. Yeah.
That's usually what I do.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Pretty well for me. And who else I've shown to others? And everyone who I've shown that idea to, they've also benefited greatly too. Because it kind of allows you to keep that relaxation in your body without getting too wound up.
Yes.
And at the same time, get the benefits from it as well.
Exactly.
And even in the rest hour, you might go over in your mind about things you learned while you were playing.
Yeah.
And learn from it while you're resting.
Right, exactly. That's actually a really good point.
All right, and one more thing. What do you do to make you feel fully relaxed when you're playing?
When I'm playing at events, or
mm-hmm.
Well, basically, I have had a crutch of my other violinist playing with me. It just makes me feel. I always say that I'm not really a soloist. But when I play solos, tracks help me a lot. I like to play along with backtracks, just to get me to keep timing and to focus on something else. Mm. Kind of distracts me from my own playing and the crowd. I feel like, you know, the audience, there's a level of relatability.
Yeah.
When I have the track, and then when I also have someone else playing with me, there's a element of interest, because now they have two different parts for their minds to be playing with. And I've honestly, like, this might be a debilitating thing or a helpful thing, that I kind of just like to have my music notes there just to help me to keep my mind occupied on something. But I do plan to wean myself from all of the above. But I like the fact that my body just feels like, I feel at ease, because I'm just like, okay, you know what? You have this. You have the practice. You put in the practice. You have the notes if you need them. The audience has the background track and the backup track, so they know what you're playing, you know, mm-hmm. like, it helps with it. And hey, you have your buddy next to you if all else fails.
Yeah.
So that's what I do to relax. But when I'm playing solos, it's just a matter of, like, you know, breathing, honestly. Just breathing and feeling the song. And I think that's when I feel the most relaxed, when I feel the song and I'm totally divorced myself from all my from the audience. Kind of, I know the audience reaction is important, but I sometimes have to divorce myself from them and just feel like, you're playing, you know, for your enjoyment. Remember why you're a violinist.
Mm-hmm.
Because you enjoy listening to it and you enjoy playing it. And once I breathe and I'm aware of my body cues, I am able to relax more, because I'm able to practice to relax more when I'm in my practice session. So mm-hmm. that when I hit the stage, I'm just translating what I do at home onto the stage.
Yeah. And what you said, backing tracks instead of accompanists.
Yes.
Bad accompanists. Kind of like.
Yes.
Counterproductive in that situation.
My fair share of drama with accompanists. Horrible, horrible. You just have. And not all the time you get to select your accompanist.
Mm.
And that's why I'm just like, just be safe, because I've gone into exams with accompanists that were just more nervous than I was, and that is super, super, super distracting. And it ends up being that you're basically accompanying them,
yeah,
rather than vice versa.
You need more than you need
them. Yes, exactly. And they tell you afterwards, oh my gosh, I was so nervous, and I'm like, you were nervous on my exam, like, really?
So I want to know.
Oh yeah, so that's what I do. I use tracks versus accompanists, but when I do get to choose my accompanists, I will definitely choose one that I'm 100% comfortable with. Mm. So that would be a non-issue.
Yeah, because they do, they could really mess you up. I think I remember once in String Festival when my accompanist, I think, kind of messed me up actually, because the song I was playing is an Israeli song.
Uh-huh.
And the accompanist, she played it kind of like a swing jazz, even though it's not that type of swing.
Yes.
So when I would rely on the rhythm of the song, the swing of the rhythm, for me to play my part as best I could, I didn't have that. And it was played more like a jazz song than an actual abrupt kind of on your toes, Middle Eastern type of rhythm. Yes. That messed me up.
Yeah.
So my timings kind of fell apart. And even though I practiced that a lot more than anybody would have thought, it still fell apart.
Yeah, exactly. It's so unfortunate. So
I can relate there.
It's so unfortunate. But not all the times we're fortunate enough to ideally control how we want things to run. But every experience is a learning one.
Mm-hmm. And you can learn from every experience. Correct. And when you're becoming a virtuoso, it all adds up.
Yes, for sure.
All of it adds up. So I think we're good there.
Yeah.
26 minutes. Good long while.